Rantoul, partly cloudy skies, 23 degrees. Clear skies in Springfield, where it's 21. In Indiana, Indianapolis reporting mostly cloudy skies and 23 degrees. In Terre Haute, it's mostly cloudy and 21. South Bend, overcast skies, 23 degrees. At Willard Airport in Champaign, a few clouds reported, 22 degrees. The dew point 16, winds out of the northwest at 8 miles per hour. The humidity 70% and the barometric pressure 30.44 inches and holding steady. And outside our studios on Friends Plaza in Urbana, it's 21 degrees.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Woodyard Allen Farm, Ridge Farm, Ray's Heating and Air Conditioning, Urbana, and Prairie Ridge Farms Incorporated, Allerton. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Our technical director is Kyle Mabry. After a heavy weekend of football, NPR's Steve Inskeep today spoke with John Orand of Sports Business Journal about the business of the NFL in the weeks leading up to the Super Bowl.
Unbelievable games over the weekend, especially that Baltimore game. I couldn't believe it.
Well, 35 million of us tuned in for that Baltimore game, which was the most that ever saw an NFL playoff game on a Saturday. So a lot of people agree with you.
Okay, so that's the first question to ask here. We hear a lot about the Super Bowl, and we'll talk about that as a commercial event in a moment. But the playoffs leading up to them, there's several rounds of playoffs, so they must also be big money winners.
Well, it just shows that the strength of the NFL. The NFL is the most popular sport in America. It's probably the most popular entertainment in America right now. So we had about 35 million people tune in on CBS, which is more by 10 million than watch the championship game for the BCS with Notre Dame, which is a really big school and has a national following. So the NFL is doing really, really well. And what's really impressive to me about the NFL is that it's not market-based. So yesterday you had Seattle playing Atlanta. We don't have the TV numbers back for that yet, but it was a close game, and I'm sure that it got over 30 million, which is, again, more than the BCS game. And can you imagine if you had a World Series with the Mariners against the Braves, the two teams that are with those, represent those two cities? I'm sure it would be the least watched World Series of all time.
In other words, people are not just watching because it's the home team, they're watching because it's the NFL.
Because it's football, and there's just a love affair with football that's been going on for the past couple of decades.
Now, how has that gone on, even as some other sports have declined and some other TV deals have declined? I mean, the NFL just keeps going on no matter how the industry changes.
Exactly. The NFL goes from strength to strength. And, for example, the Super Bowl ads, every single year for the past 4 years, we've been talking about record-setting numbers that they're getting for ads. And if you take a look at TV and general entertainment TV and primetime, advertising rates are going down, viewership is going down, and it's the exact opposite for the NFL.
What's it going to cost this year to get 30 seconds of time at the Super Bowl?
Well, the average is getting close to $4 million per 30 seconds, which is yet another record. And the records go up by about 10% each year, it seems. And advertisers still view, even with that big price point, the Super Bowl as being just the best place to shop their wares.
Isn't it still true, though, especially since the price keeps going up, that on a strict dollar-for-dollar basis, it's not worth it? You don't get enough people to justify $4 million for an ad in the Super Bowl.
Well, that's what GM decided back in the spring, and they decided that they wanted to pull out because the price was getting too high. And GM has been a big advertiser in the Super Bowl for the past couple of years. Well, this year you have Audi, Cars.com, Chrysler, Mercedes, Hyundai, Kia, Toyota, VW. There are plenty of car advertisers that are deciding that the Super Bowl really is one of the two, maybe three TV shows that aggregate such a huge audience that they really want to launch a product by or shop their wares on.
John, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Steve.
That's NPR Steve Inskeep talking with John Orand of Sports Business Journal. A mass demonstration was held in France on Sunday by activists opposed to gay marriage. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley has this report.
They came from every corner of France by car, bus, and specially reserved high-speed train. They wound their way through the French capital from three different starting points, filling the boulevards until they converged under the Eiffel Tower for a giant rally. There were old people, young people, and lots of families with children. In fact, children were the main point of the demonstration. Rather than homophobic placards, protesters carried banners with smiling babies on them that read, "Made in Mama plus Papa." Marie Gabrielle says it's not right for a child to have two mothers or two fathers.
The marriage is done for people who want to have children. And for the moment, two guys cannot have babies. That's all. That's just the nature.
36-year-old Ludovic Lamay fears opening the way for same-sex adoption and conception will shake the very foundations of society.
We think that it's more a question of the fundamentally in the society today. Do we want this type of wedding and this type of family for children?
France does have civil unions for same-sex couples, but the law has no provisions for adoption or assisted reproduction, issues that have become a lightning rod in the current debate. When Hollande promised to legalize same-sex marriage on the campaign trail, most observers thought the measure would pass easily in France, which lags behind its European neighbors on marriage and adoption rights for gays. But instead, it has churned up French society, bringing deep traditional currents to the surface. The issue has also highlighted the divide between urban and more conservative rural France. Many marchers carried regional flags with emblems dating back to the Middle Ages. While polls show a majority of French are for same-sex marriage, support for the bill has fallen since August, as the Catholic Church has managed to mobilize a hybrid coalition of church-going families, political conservatives, Muslims, evangelicals, and even gays to oppose it. And Hollande's clumsy handling of other campaign promises has the opposition salivating that he'll botch this one, too. Jean-François Copé, a conservative from former President Nicolas Sarkozy's party, said France had other priorities, like fighting Islamist radicals in Mali. He urged Hollande to hold a referendum and let the people decide.
Perhaps now is the time for François Hollande to listen to the clamor of the French people, who are deeply divided over this issue.
As the demo breaks up, well after dark, I strike up a conversation with 72-year-old Bruno Vemel, who is heading home. I ask him if the march will send a message to François Hollande.
Of course. What is good is that you had Roman Catholic, you had Jews, you had Muslims, you had people coming from the provinces.
But speaking on television last night, government minister Michel Sapin seemed unimpressed.
Ils expriment une opinion, libre à eux. Est-ce que ça fait changer pour autant le cours des choses?
It's good they're expressing their opinion, said Sapin. But in 6 months, will we remember this march? I don't think so. And by then, the law will be passed and no one will go back on it. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation, clear, straight, open, from NPR News.
Weekday afternoons at 1 on AM 580.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 14th of January, 2013. It's the birthday of Albert Schweitzer, born in Kaisersberg in the province of Alsace-Lorraine, 1875. He was a musical prodigy. He was a theologian, an expert on Bach and Goethe and Kant. And when he was 21, Schweitzer made a plan. For the next 9 years, he would devote himself to learning and religion, but once he turned 30, he would spend the rest of his life serving humanity. And so, on his 30th birthday, he went off to medical school. His wife, Helena, trained as a nurse at the same time so she could help him with his work, and in 1913, they set sail for French Equatorial Africa to set up a hospital in La Baronnais in Gabon. He paid for the hospital himself out of money he'd earned giving concerts. It was a rustic place, even dirty by Western standards. They worked by kerosene lamps, no electricity except in the operating rooms, no phones, no radios. Patients brought their family members to cook and care for them. Albert Schweitzer turned 90 years old in Gabon. He told his co-workers at his hospital, "I belong to you until my dying breath." He died 8 months later in the hospital that he'd built. He was buried near the banks of the Agoue River. The hospital now treats more than 35,000 people a year. It's the birthday of Emily Hahn, born St. Louis, 1905. She was one of the first women to get a degree in engineering from the University of Wisconsin at Madison in 1926, after which she and a friend dressed up as men and drove across the country in a Model T Ford. She was a woman always on the move. One of her catchphrases was, "Nobody said not to go." She became a writer for the New Yorker magazine, a career that lasted almost 70 years. Moved to Shanghai, became a correspondent there, took up smoking opium, had an affair with the head of British Army Intelligence in Hong Kong, had a daughter by him, moved back to New York City. And through all of this, Emily Hahn wrote 54 books and more than 200 articles for The New Yorker. She wrote about diamonds, about the Philippines, about primates. She wrote about her wartime romance in her book China to Me. And when she died at the age of 92, her granddaughter gave her eulogy in which she said, "Chances are your grandmother didn't smoke cigars and let you hold wild role-playing parties in her apartment. Chances are she didn't teach you Swahili obscenities. Chances are that when she took you to the zoo, she didn't start whooping at the top of her lungs as you passed the gibbon cage. Sadly for you, your grandmother was not Emily Hahn." Here's a poem for today by Alfred Lord Tennyson. Three verses from his long poem, In Memoriam. "Dark house by which once more I stand, here in the long, unlovely street, doors where my heart was used to beat so quickly, waiting for a hand that can be clasped no more. Behold me, for I cannot sleep, and like a guilty thing I creep at earliest morning to the door. He is not here, but far away the noise of life begins again, and ghastly through the drizzling rain on the bald street breaks the blank day." Three verses from In Memoriam by Alfred Lord Tennyson.